Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. I hope you are warm and dry today. Well, I want to ask, if you ever get to the point where you want to make a change, maybe you've been thinking of moving somewhere new after this weekend of rain. But sometimes, you know, thinking of everything you have to accomplish to create that change can be overwhelming, and so you end up doing nothing. Or maybe you decide you've got to do this now, and whatever this is, you try to implement drastic change overnight. Well, executive coach Shannon Cassidy says there's no need to make a 180-degree shift at work or at home. She says the most effective and lasting change happens just 5 degrees at a time. And Shannon Cassidy joins us later today to share how small changes lead to big results. But first, Dr. Jack Godwin says, in today's hyper-competitive job market, you have to be hardworking, smart, and educated, but you also have to be politically astute. So if you're someone who dislikes power games and avoids office politics at all costs, he says politics is a skill you can learn and benefit from. And that's what we're going to be talking about in our first segment today. He has written a new book called The Office Politics Handbook, Winning the Game of Power and Politics at Work. And let me tell you a little bit about Jack himself. He is a political scientist whose appeal spans the political spectrum. Former Defense Secretary Leon Panetta called Clintonomics, which was his previous book, a must-read. And he began, Jack Godwin began his career as a Peace Corps volunteer in West Africa. He has a doctorate from the University of Hawaii and degrees from San Francisco State University and the University of California, Berkeley. And he's a four-time Fulbright scholar and a member of the Pacific Council on International Policy. And he's right now down in Sacramento. Jack Godwin, welcome to the show today.
Hello, Vicki. I should just update you a little bit. I just finished my fifth Fulbright, which was in Quebec City at Laval University, and I'm back in the office today.
So that's why you were away. We were talking before the show, and you said you just got back. Well, congratulations. That's pretty exciting.
Thank you. That'll be my last one, though. I'm going to retire from competition.
Okay. Well, your latest book is called The Office Politics Handbook, Winning the Game of Power and Politics at Work, and interesting book, and I think probably a much-needed book, because I know many people hear the word politics and roll their eyes, and office politics and roll their eyes even more. So let me.
Why write a book on office politics, a subject no one likes, but everybody has to contend with it. Everybody has to deal with it if you work in any kind of an organization.
Absolutely. I think anywhere people are involved, actually, you have to deal with it to some extent. So let me read you a statement, and you tell me, I want to ask you how much truth you think is in this. The statement is, politics is about power, the acquisition of power, the distribution of power, the uses and abuses of power, and any relationship, personal or professional, becomes political the moment power is introduced. How much truth do you think is in that?
Well, I think it's a perfectly true statement. What is politics? Politics is any situation, any relationship in which power gets introduced. Not every, some situations need to be politicized, but most don't. And especially if anybody's working in the private sector, what you want to do is try and depoliticize decisions and situations and make the workplace more productive for everybody.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about you, Jack, first. What made you take political science and pursue political science as a career?
Well, I had a, like many people, I guess, I had a professor who I really admired when I was an undergraduate. And his name was Raghavan Iyer. He was an Indian immigrant to California, and he was just spellbinding as a professor in college. And I just got the spark somehow, and he really inspired me.
Okay. Well, so you now teach, right? And write books and speak.
Now I teach occasionally. I guest lecture occasionally. Now I'm a full-time administrator. I've been an administrator for quite a few years, but I still like to write and on various subjects. This particular book is really the intersection of my political science background, but also my business background. I have an MBA, and I spent some years in the private sector. So I thought I'd come at this particular topic, as I say, and as you said, that everybody has to deal with, but no one likes. From that point of view, it's really the intersection of my two careers as a political scientist and as a manager.
Mm. It's always interesting to me how people formulate their career and how, you know, things spoke off from there. I was looking at a study from Robert Half International, and they said that nearly 60% of workers believe that involvement in office politics is at least somewhat necessary to get ahead. And so, you know, a lot of people would call this game playing. You use, throughout the book, you talk about this being an inward journey. You talk about authentic leadership, not things that you normally would associate with politics. So tell us what kind of approach you took to putting this book together.
Well, I think, as I said, situations become politicized when power is introduced. The idea is to kind of police your own bad habits and exercise more self-discipline to not politicize situations inadvertently. In that respect, it's much like the broken window theory of policing. One broken window in a neighborhood sends a signal that no one cares, so no one will care about a second broken window. But if you take care of your own business, you can transform the organization. And the idea of the book is not to set traps or play dirty tricks on your coworkers. The idea is to make the workplace better, better for you, better for your colleagues, better even for your boss, by understanding what politics is and getting it to a minimum.
Right. And you say in the book you have to master yourself in order to be good at this, to develop the political skills you talk about. You define self-mastery as a multidimensional value system with a feedback loop. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, that is, I would say, pretty abstract writing, and you'll have to forgive me for that. what is self-mastery? Well, I mean, let's say at the end of the book, what you want to be able to do is read the field, read the players, calculate the power differential, look at your alternative courses of action, consider what would be the cost of taking no action, decide what you're going to do, and do it, all in the span of a few moments. Now, that's kind of a long list, but I go through it throughout the book about this is what I call situational awareness. Can you do that in the span of a few moments? Then I would say that's some pretty solid evidence of self-mastery.
Right, right. You talk about seven different political archetypes. You share those in the book: the servant leader, the rebel, the mentor, the recluse, the judo master, resistor, opportunist, and survivor. Why are archetypes so important in getting ahead of the game?
Well, archetypes are symbols in concentrated form. They're reflections and expressions of our human nature, and they're common to all types of organizations, all types of cultures, locations, and so on. The reason they're important is because it has to do with power. It has to do with pattern recognition, like a good chess player. Any chess move is the result of a one-time calculation and general pattern recognition. The archetypes help you recognize patterns from of your previous experiences. Maybe you recognize archetypal behavior in yourself, in a colleague, or your boss. And it helps you with this idea of a situational awareness. And I've got to say, this is chapter 6 you're talking about, and there are, by the way, eight archetypes. This is the chapter that people are really drawn to. They're really fascinated. And in some ways, I'm not surprised, because they are archetypal. You
right.
see them everywhere.
Right.
You see them in movies like The Godfather. So you see them in the Matrix, the movie series.
Yes. I mean, all through history, too, and all through mythology, it's all about archetypes. So is there one archetype in this political sense, talking office politics here, that is more effective than the others? Or is it just a case of knowing their patterns?
First, it is a question of knowing the patterns. And the idea is to defend yourself, defend colleagues, and minimize politics. But which one is best depends entirely on the situation. And this is why you have to have situational awareness.
Right.
Reading the field and so on.
Right.
The idea, again, let's talk about the servant leader. The idea for this one is leading by example. And this is important because, like I said, some relationships shouldn't be politicized. They should not be based on power. If you're truly a leader, an authentic leader, you're getting people to follow you voluntarily. They are giving you their consent. This is not a power-based relationship. It's a true leadership relationship. And so it's really quite important.
Right. So how do you define the difference between politics and somebody who's just being manipulative? Is there a difference?
No, I would really say that the example of someone trying to manipulate people, they are politicizing a relationship. And that's the kind of thing, I just think no one likes it. It doesn't make the organization more productive. It may get you some sort of advantage in the short term, but not really. It makes everybody's job harder.
Right.
For the most part.
So
that type of manipulative behavior.
Yes, I would totally agree with you. And, you know, manipulative people tend to think nobody knows they're trying to manipulate them, and I would disagree with that. I think it's usually very obvious. But let's talk about when you're attacked.
Can I interrupt at one point?
Yeah,
you said
yeah.
at the top, you talked about, and I said this in the book, that politics is a skill you can learn. And that is true, and it's much like any other micro-level skill that you probably learned in school, or you're doing some sort of professional development paid for by the organization. For example, how to be a good negotiator, how to be a good communicator. These are what I call micro-level skills. Any executive has to be good with the external political environment, especially if you're working with environmental regulations, or there's lobbyists, or whatever. What I'm saying is, let's turn our attention inward, get better at the internal politics. And again, it's a skill you can learn, and you can recognize manipulators better and defend yourself against them better.
Right. So what, leading on from that then, what would be some signs that somebody is trying to manipulate the situation?
Well, I mean, look around you. First, throw out the organization chart. Who has veto power over your decisions? Who is competing with you for resources? Who is obstructing progress? Not in your career necessarily, but in some sort of project that you're supposed to be accomplishing on behalf of the organization. Ask yourself those questions. You may not like the answers, but that's how you can know. The other type of manipulator is the sycophant, the people who gain power temporarily, but they gain it by flattery. They attach themselves to the chief executive or some other powerful person in the hierarchy. No one really respects them. No one admires them. But they're like, it's like part of life. This is a way that some people aggrandize themselves and have a little bit of power for a little while.
Right, right. So what are some of the ways that, feel free to use a personal example here. If you have been, politically attacked in a situation, let's say you're in a, I can think of a couple of times when I've been attacked around a board table, and it's come very surreptitiously. I was not expecting it at all. And, you know, I tend to be fairly direct, and people know that I am that way. And so you know, I'm not usually afraid to stand up for myself, but many people are. So how do you tell them how to deal with something like that?
Well, you recognize their patterns of speech. Someone will say, well, Vicky, if you really wanted to get ahead, you'd do this. Or they'd say, how do you respond to that? You'd say, you just look at them, you challenge the presupposition, and you just say, what makes you think I don't want to get ahead? Now, when they say, if you really wanted, you can respond, well, first, there's no question, there's no if. I do really want to get ahead, and we're going to do this other alternative that I've decided on,
right,
which you may not like. The other thing they'll commonly do is challenge your rationale. You'll have made a decision, and they'll say, well, why did you do this? And you state your reasons. And they'll say, well, those reasons are no good. And you'll just say, well, okay, I don't require you to agree with my decision. I don't require you to agree with my reasons or even understand them, for that matter. I'm the executive in charge of this area. This is how we're going to move forward.
Right. So being very assertive and standing our ground, basically.
Yes, that comes next. But first, read the field, read the players. Sometimes it's not worth it. You don't want to pick a fight. You want to withdraw if it's simply not that important to you. But the idea is to, for example, with the judo master archetype, you can use your adversary's momentum and power that they're trying to force upon you. You can leverage that and even turn them into an ally sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't always want to fight. You want to know when not to fight.
And that's the key thing because, you know, we hear all the time you have to pick your battles if you want to win the war, which is, you know, the same thing. Is it worth fighting about? Is it something I really want to put a stake in the ground on? What kind of thinking should you put into that?
Well, what you're talking about is something you asked before, and maybe I didn't give a full enough answer. It's this inward journey. When you really start looking at your career and your life and your values, you'll become more aware of what's important to you.
Right.
And that's the things that are important to you. That's when you know what you want to fight for. And you have to be able to make some decisions. You're not going to win every battle. Sometimes you will be overpowered. Shrug it off and keep going. One of the things I talk about towards the end of the book, which I think is extremely important for people who work in any kind of an organization, is the power of showing up every day. In many ways, I think there's no more powerful force in the universe. Just keep showing up. Put on a display of persistence and integrity, and you can change the workplace.
Right, right. And just if we could end with this very quickly, you talk about bullying in the workplace and standing up for people if we witness bullying in the workplace, what do you want people to take away from that?
Well, this is I wrote this as an appendix to the book simply because I really wasn't sure where it would fit into the narrative of the book. So I it's an appendix. That doesn't mean to diminish its value, but I'm looking at bullying in our schoolyards. And I'm looking at online bullying, which often leads either to violence or people take their own lives, and it's just terrible. We have to do something about it, and we do something about it first by talking about it. And I think my point about bullying is that many of the same tools and techniques that I talk about throughout the rest of the book, you can use to minimize bullying in the workplace, in the schoolyard, online, in any situation.
Yeah, excellent. Well, Jack Godwin, I thank you so much for being with us today. The book is called The Office Politics Handbook, Winning the Game of Power and Politics at Work. Do you have a website, Jack?
Well, you can get the book at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com or go directly to the publisher, CareerPress.com.
All right, sounds good. Thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And please do stay with us. When we come back, we'll be joined by the CEO of Bridge Between Inc., Shannon Cassidy, and she's going to talk about taking very tiny baby steps to make huge change in your life. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, Richard Heimberg discusses snake oil, how fracking's false promise of plenty imperils our future. Tune in every Monday at noon Pacific for conversations that inspire, inform, and stimulate right here on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Find guest details and more than 300 free podcasts at conversationslive.net.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
1150kknw.com, your connection to alternative talk, 1150 AM.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Well, before we bring on Shannon Cassidy today, I have a little book giveaway here. So I'm going to ask Eric, do you remember Jan Sincero, who wrote a book called You Are a Badass?
I do remember, yes.
Well, if you were listening to that, you know, we have the podcast on the conversationslive.net. But Jan is a really fun, different kind of coach. She's a kind of in-your-face she's just different.
Would you describe her as a badass?
A badass. Well, listen, the girl survived a Howard Stern show, so
you got to be a bit of a badass.
And she's survived several comedy clubs too. So she's quite humorous. Her book, contains a lot of steps to making change in your life. And I have two of those books to give away. And we're going to do it through Facebook, through email, through social media. And I'm going to give out all that information in a minute. And if you'd like a copy of the book, then go ahead and make a submission. Just get in touch with us, in other words. And then we'll do a drawing of all of the names and we'll announce who's got the books. So I have two of those books. It's You Are a Badass. And she is a coach. She actually specializes in writing as a writing coach. But she does all kinds of coaching and has a very varied background. And then the other book that I have two of these to give away to, the guest we just talked with, Dr. Jack Godwin, and he's a political scientist, PhD. His book, The Office Politics Handbook, Winning the Game of Power and Politics at Work, I have two of these to give away too. And I mean, I have to say this book really, I think, is for somebody who just doesn't like politics. You know, but studies show, and I read out the Robert Half's survey earlier on, you know, over 60% of people feel they'd get ahead better at work if they could figure out politics better. Do you enjoy politics at work, Eric?
No.
Well, I think that's, you know, most people don't, but there are people, I'm sure in the past you've worked, not here, of course, but I'm sure in the past you've worked with people who have been very political, and you can sit there and sometimes watch them maneuvering situations. And mm-hmm. sometimes if we had a little skill or knowledge, it would help us deal with those kind of people.
True enough.
It can be very difficult. Well, we've got two of those books to give away too. So I'm going to give you a way that you can enter for the You're a Badass coaching book and for the Office Politics Handbook. We've got two of each, and you can either email us at info@conversationslive.net, and conversations is plural, info@conversationslive.net, and you can just put either Office Politics, or you can put You're a Badass in the subject line, whichever book you prefer, okay, and we'll put you in that respective drawing. You can also like us on Facebook, and you can leave a message there, or you can direct message me through Facebook. And that's at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And you can also connect with us via Twitter at Vicky St. Clair. That's really simple, at Vicky St. Clair. And you spell my name V-I-C-K-I-S-T-C-L-A-I-R. All I's, no E's. All right, so we're going to run that through Friday, and then we'll do the drawing, and we'll announce it next Monday who got the books, okay? And if you missed any of that, you can always call our 800 number, 495-7617, and get the details there, 800-495-7617. All right, we are going to take a very quick break right now, and we'll be back with Shannon Cassidy and the 5-Degree Principle. Please stay with us. Super bad. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair with Conversations Live. If you'd like to gain more exposure for your business, service, or event, or if you'd like to raise awareness for an issue or topic you're passionate about, call me. Let's talk about ways we might partner to shine the spotlight on you and bring you the recognition you deserve. Call me at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., we cover the world of animals. This week, October 6th, join me for a live remote broadcast at Jones & Company Pets in Marysville. It's their annual blowout sale with free espresso, popcorn, cotton candy, raffle, and buy one, get one half off on all pet food. I'll answer your questions. Plus, Dr. Nels Rasmussen will be there doing best treatments on your animal friends. So bring them along. The doors open at 10 a.m. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Remember, you're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My next guest is Shannon Cassidy. She's the founder and CEO of Bridge Between Inc., a specialized management consulting firm focused on behavioral change and communication. And before starting her own company, Shannon spent many years as a corporate leader, successfully building profitable businesses and driving innovation and leadership initiatives. She's the co-author of the book called Now Discover Your Inner Strengths, which came out just a couple of years ago. And she has a new book out now called The 5-Degree Principle, How Small Changes Lead to Big Results. And that came out this year. Shannon Cassidy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vicky.
Fun book, this, because it's a little different to a lot of the books out there. You know, so many people want to make change and think about change. They get overwhelmed. And, you know, there are many, many, many books out there on change. This is quite a small book, and it's a very easy read, which doesn't lessen the validity of it in any way. So tell us a little bit about the book in your own words.
Yeah, sure. It's a leadership fable. It's about a single parent executive named Lauren who's overlooked for promotion, and she's not happy about it, understandably. And the organization hires her a coach named Andrea, who that doesn't make things any better at first, because Lauren is unhappy that she's got to work with this additional support system. But she works with her coach, and she makes a transformation. She discovers her personal power, and she understands that change is only possible in small incremental steps.
Right. And so we basically follow Lauren through the course of this book, and we learn the lessons that Lauren learns. And of course, the big lesson behind your book is that you don't have to make 180-degree shifts of change overnight. It's often better and more effective to make 5-degree changes.
Exactly. And I think many people approach change with the belief that it's going to require this major adjustment to get results. And the 5-degree shifts are tweaks, nuances, improvements that move the needle enough to make a significant difference.
Yes. Yeah. And you know what? I'm going to share a personal story here, right? Because I was reading your book down by the lake one day.
Lovely.
In the evening, and I had to go walk my dog, and I thought, I'm taking that book and I'm going to read, right? Because we all want to make change. All of us want to make changes all the time. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to do was cut sugar from my diet. And so I'm such a sugarholic. I seriously am a sugarholic. And so I decided to replace my nightly ice cream with, I bought a juicer and I started making my own juice. And I just did that. And as a consequence of that, in like, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks now, I've lost 17 pounds as well.
What?
So this
in
is
5 weeks?
It's about 6 weeks, I think.
Wow.
I can't remember.
Congratulations.
But it was such a minor change and such a little change that it was kind of exciting, right?
Very. Very exciting. Wow, I love it. And that's just it. Like, pick one thing. You know, some people don't sleep enough.
Yeah.
So if they say, okay, what statistically we should get 7 to 8 hours a night. So take the time that you must get up and minus seven, and that's your bedtime. I mean, that sounds so elementary, but really that's what it's going to take, is to make a commitment to one thing, be it sleep or diet or exercise or speaking up or not speaking so often, that is going to help move the needle. And then you'll see the progress, you'll feel strong, and then you pick the next thing. So those 5 degrees add up, but at any given time, just take one bite.
Right, right. And so this book really helps in on a personal level and on a professional level. I want to just refer to the book for a minute, because we start out with Lauren not getting the promotion that she'd hoped for. You talk about something in the book called the Peter Principle. Share with our listeners what that's all about.
The Peter Principle is the phenomenon that happens where individuals get promoted beyond their highest level of competence. And typically that happens when there's some kind of a relationship. Like, say, a college friend or a longtime buddy or some other personal relationship that enables someone to get promoted beyond his or her true competence. And because of that, individuals who are now reporting to that person who got elevated beyond their real limit pay the price, because they've got to, you know, work around this person who's got a lot of political power, but not necessarily the right level of experience or competence to be effective in the job. So this happens with Lauren, where the person who gets the promotion that she feels she deserved is the friend of her boss, and this person is not technically eligible for the job, but got it anyway. So she's got to overcome that challenge.
Right. So do you have an example in your life of when something like that has happened to you, and how you used some of the principles you talk about to turn that around?
Yes, I have had that exact thing happen in my career. And, you know, the approach that I took was to build a relationship with the person who I was now reporting to. And that person was exemplifying the Peter Principle. So I built the relationship with my manager, try to establish expectations, and then align to try to figure out how we could still accomplish the goals, because I really didn't want a roadblock in my way. I wanted to still be able to be successful, and I just had to park my ego. And I remember that being the most difficult part, because there were so many examples of things that this person would do or say, and I would think, oh,
We've all been there.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it that way. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's the wrong thing to do. It just was frustrating to me. So I really needed to separate. I had read a great book at the time called, he wrote a second book called Getting Past No, but it was The Power of Yes. William Ury wrote the book.
Right, right.
And Getting to Yes, that was the book, Getting to Yes. And in the book, one of the steps is, he says, separate the person from the problem. And that was so timely for me because I really needed to separate out this individual and the competence or lack thereof and the problem, which was, at that point, you know, our business plan and being effective. So I really needed to be as objective as possible, which isn't always easy.
Yeah. And the first chapter in the book is about demonstrating resiliency. And that, you know, I've talked with many psychologists and psychiatrists, and they say that is really the key to leading a successful life, is you've got to be resilient and you've got to bounce back from those setbacks.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that it all comes down to your belief system. You know, what you believe is true, what you believe about your own setbacks, the story that you tell about the things that happen and the people around you, which are all components of your belief system, which is another way of saying how you interpret a situation. So I think that all of us have the ability to reframe situations so that we can be powerful and we can be resilient, but it requires some maturity and introspection and a willingness to look at things differently.
Right, right. And one of the chapters in the book is called Expect the Unexpected. And I think this is true of life in general, whether you're feeling stuck and want to make change or whether you're just, you know, in a good place and going day to day. We do have to expect the unexpected without sitting there waiting for the other shoe to drop. But talk to us a little bit about that, if you would.
Absolutely, Vicky. I think that's the key, is to know that it's an unpredictable life, and as much as I think we're all addicted to certainty, whether that be an evening snack like you were just referring to, or a habit of some sort, that we need to be able to expect the unexpected and know that anything is possible. And that's both exciting and daunting, right? Because to say that anything's possible means, like, I literally could rewrite my script right now and have a whole new existence. But it's daunting if I'm thinking about all of this change and I'm overwhelmed by, gosh, where do I even begin and what is this going to mean and how uncomfortable am I going to have to be? So I just think that if we could look at life and be in a state of curiosity, right, and say, you just never really do know what somebody's going to say. And, you know, to say something like, life stinks and then you die, or however people phrase that.
Right.
I think that that's such a poor mentality.
Yeah.
and limits the possibilities that exist in any given day and any given situation or conversation. You know, I often am confused when I hear people say, gosh, you know, this meeting is so boring or this person is so boring. And I think, well, you must not be asking the right questions. Right, because any individual has so much to give. We just need to find a way to unearth that. So I think that curious state of exploration and trying to dig in to find out what's possible is a really healthy approach to life.
Yes, I remember an interview with Kate Hepburn that I was watching. This young journalist interview Kate Hepburn when she was fairly elderly. And the journalist said, what do you do when you get bored? And she ripped her head off. Literally, she said, bored? Bored? I don't get bored. You don't have a right to get bored. And I thought, boy, she's going out fighting. I just love that spunk in that lady. So let's talk about relationships, friendships, toxic relationships, because I think that's one of the key places we need to start when we're trying to make change, because we don't need to be dragging baggage with us.
Right. Yeah, and in this book, Lauren has a toxic friend, somebody who, it's subtly toxic, you know, she's not overtly trying to do damage, but she just has like a negative point of view and waiting for the next shoe to drop kind of mentality. And I think toxic relationships hurt us in so many ways because they sap our valuable energy that we could be spending on things and people that we really love. And they can also color our perspective, and we then adopt that person's negative lens sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think that takes away the enjoyment and fulfillment that we have.
Well, what are some questions that we might want to ask if we're trying to, if we're, you know, we're sitting on a fence about a relationship, whether it's business or personal, what are some of the questions we might ask to figure out in our own heads, is this person really toxic?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the main questions that I ask myself about myself is, am I an energy producer or am I an energy consumer? So I think that's one of the biggest questions that we all need to be honest with ourselves. You know, do I contribute? Do I add to my environment, or am I a consumer of it or a drain of it?
I love that.
I think another one is about judgment and criticism. You know, is this person who I'm dealing with overly judgmental and critical of other people, or are they more generous in how they perceive situations and other people? And then, again, to be introspective, I ask myself the same thing. You know, am I overly critical or overly judgmental, or am I more generous in how I interpret individuals and situations? You know, what is the content like of a person's conversations? What do they tend to talk about? If you could, you know, give them a title for the book that they are, you know, what would the title be? And is it a drama? Is it a comedy? Is it something really intriguing and interesting? You know, what kind of an individual is this person? And again, to be introspective, asking myself the same question, you know, what kind of individual am I? And then I think, you know, does this person show a genuine interest in me? Or are all of our conversations around them and their issues and their challenges and their judgments?
Right. I love, Shannon, that you started with introspection, because I think that's where we do need to start. I know myself, if I'm like super stressed and have too much going on, I will become too critical, and I more so of myself than anybody else. But
yeah.
But once I start hearing that critical voice in my head, I know I need to, you know what, just step back and assess what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that you started with the introspection.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've got to be the change we wish to see. And I think we also need to know what to look for. And if we are that person, likely we're attracting other people like us.
Right, right.
Right? And I think, and if we are tending to our souls and we are working on how we're coming across and are we being present and a good friend and a genuine human and authentic and all that good stuff, you know, if we're doing the work to become that, then we want to surround ourselves with other people who are going to bring out the best in us. Because that whole phrase, birds of a feather flock together, is totally true. And I think that our number one influence is our peer group.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree. Mm-hmm. So let's take a quick break. And loads of questions for you when we come back.
Terrific.
We're talking with Shannon Cassidy, executive coach, speaker, and facilitator. And her new book is called The 5-Degree Principle, How Small Changes Lead to Big Results. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals and paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, Richard Heimberg discusses snake oil, how fracking's false promise of plenty imperils our future. Tune in every Monday at noon Pacific for conversations that inspire, inform, and stimulate right here on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Find guest details and more than 300 free podcasts at conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Some people know a good thing when they hear it. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Anything could happen. And we are talking about how small changes lead to big results. My guest, Shannon Cassidy, is an executive speaker, executive coach, and facilitator, and author of The 5-Degree Principle, How Small Changes Lead to Big Results. And this book is all about how 5-degree shifts can make all the difference. There's no need to make that 180-degree change overnight. Just those tiny little steps can lead to big change over a short period of time. Or a long period of time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about this, because you know, one of the key components to good leaders is, do they have all the answers? No, they don't. But they do know what kind of questions to ask. And sometimes it's hard when you're in a situation, especially when you want to make change and it's radical change. Sometimes it's hard to see the wood for the trees, so to speak. What kind of process can we go through to help improve our questioning ability? How do we know how to come up with the right questions?
Vicki, I think that is the essence of it all, is the question that you're asking yourself. And if we could be more aware of the quality of the questions that we're asking ourselves, and in turn, the questions that we're asking other people, that alone could be more than a 5-degree shift, when it's simply just an edit or an audit of language. So what I mean is that most of our thoughts are in the form of a question, which means that all day long we're asking ourselves questions. From the moment we woke up this morning, like, think about what are some of the questions that you asked yourself first thing this morning?
Me?
Yes.
What day is it? Seriously, what I do, I always do that, because that's sometimes, you know, when you're busy, I work 7 days a week. So that seriously is the first question I ask myself.
Mm-hmm.
So my question this morning when I got to my desk was, what do I need to do today? What do I need to get done today? Because I'm trying to implement change myself. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really trying to work on not to quote Stephen Covey, and I know you quote him in the book too, but not to focus on what's on my schedule, but to make sure my priorities are scheduled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think you're a very evolved person, Vicki, so your morning questions might not be just the same as most people. Those questions are actually really good questions to say, you know, what am I about today? You know, what am I about to accomplish today? What day is it? What can I contribute today? For a lot of people, it's like, why do I have to get up? You know, why can't I snooze? Why don't I have time to exercise? You know, why do I have to walk the dog? Why is it raining? Why? And we ask ourselves questions all day long until we finally get to go to bed in the evening. And often our questions at that point are something like, what didn't I get done today? What do I have to get done tomorrow? Why don't I get enough sleep? Those kinds of things. So the easiest or most effective way to improve the quality of our life is to improve the quality of our questions. And if we could start to pay more attention to the language that we're using when we're talking to ourselves, and yes, all of us talk to ourselves, then we could move the needle so much more. So if we were in a situation that was frustrating, we're likely to ask ourselves why questions. And why questions cause us to look in the past and second guess and maybe even interrogate ourselves or other people, like, why did they do that? Why don't I have enough time? Why didn't I get that done? Why does everybody always come to me? You know, why did I say yes? And then we feel the way that you can imagine you would feel, like just overloaded, overwhelmed. So the better way to approach that is to ask what, how questions. That's almost always true. you could say, you know, what is the right thing to do? What's the next step? What's the big deal? How could I be a leader in the situation? What's one thing I could commit to? How could I support that individual? How could I contribute my strengths? What's the good in this? What value am I gaining right now? So if I could look at a mistake I made and ask myself a question like, what's the value I'm gaining from this right now, then I could actually reap the benefit of the pain that I'm going through because of my mistake. But if I ask, why did I do that? Why didn't I see that coming? Why did I make that mistake again? Then I'm just going to feel bad, and I'm not going to get the purpose or the point.
Right, right. Let's talk about limiting stories, because this kind of segues on top of that, I think. Because, you know, often when we're trying to figure things out, we keep repeating the same old story over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I too, I mean, I have patterns where I do this loop. I come out of the, you know, go around the vortex, if you will, and I come back and I start looping again. I think this is, you know, fairly common, and being aware of it doesn't always stop it happening. So if we're telling ourselves limiting stories, where should we begin with changing that? And I know that's a huge question, and I know it's going to depend on what we're telling ourselves. But,
right.
You know.
Well, I think it really depends on the truth, like what actually happened. You know, so I think what we all need to do is pick your worst story, and I'm not going to ask you to share it, but for anybody listening, like pick your worst story. Think about the person who you just can't stand the most, or the situation that grinds your gears the most, and then ask yourself, what is actually true about that? Because here's an example. The other day, I got a text, a two-word text that said, call me. And it was from the CEO of one of the companies that I work for. That's all it said. It was 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It was 2:10 to be exact. It was 2:10 on a Tuesday.
She remembers the exact day.
And it said, call me.
Right.
That's it. But what I made that mean was something else entirely. I mean, I made that mean some catastrophe.
Right.
And this was urgent, and he had bad news to share with me, and I did something wrong. And, I mean, I tore myself up over this. And finally, I called him, and I got his voicemail. That added another chapter to my story, you know, and I said, oh, my gosh, now he's not even accepting my phone calls. I mean, I really put this into something disastrous. Then when I finally got a hold of him, he said to me, oh, I couldn't wait to tell you. You know, this big thing that we were working on got resolved. I wanted to thank you for your assistance and, you know, good news. And I said, oh, my goodness. I said, as much as I frown on emoticons, his little smiley face would have gone a long way. And he said, oh, no, what did you think I meant? And I had to admit that I interpreted his text in a semi-scary way. And he said, oh, my goodness, no. But I had to do my own unpacking of that situation and say, why did I go so dark so quick? You know, what is it about this situation or my own self-esteem or, you know, my client that caused me to have that interpretation of a two-word text? And I think that that's just an example of how we do that. And we have to boil it back down to, like, what actually happened? And then what did I make it mean? And own the authorship or the ownership of that interpretation. And then say, well, what else could I make it mean? And you could put a positive spin on it, like assume positive intent, assume that it's good news, or make it mean nothing, you know, neutralize it and say, well, I don't actually know what the real facts are. I don't know why this individual is calling me or why I got that email. I'll have to wait and see. And then control the impulse that we often don't control of, you know, making up a story.
Yeah, I think that's a great example, because I think most of us are pretty good at making everything a catastrophe before it's even happened.
Right. So dial it back and have that self-control.
Right. So we're right at the end of our segment, and I want to ask you before we go today what you would like to leave our listeners with today, what you want them to take away from this and what you'd like to leave them with today.
Oh, thank you, Vicki. I want everyone to think about what's one step, because every step counts. If you think back on your life and you look at the progress that you have made, think about all of that progress began with one step. It was either an idea or it was a commitment that you made to someone or something you read, and you said, this is it. I'm going to do this. And then you took a step. So today, moving forward, what is that step for you?
I think that's awesome. Thank you, Shannon Cassidy. I really appreciate you being with us today. And the best website for people to find out more about you?
ShannonCassidy.com.
ShannonCassidy.com. And I just want to very quickly read a quote that Shannon has in her book here. It's from C.S. Lewis. We all want progress, but if you're on the wrong road, progress means doing an about turn and walking back into the right road. In that case, the man who turns back soonest is the most progressive. I love that quote. Shannon Cassidy, thanks so much for being with us today. The book, again, The 5-Degree Principle, has small changes lead to big results. And it's in a fable of you follow Lauren through her journey, single mom. It's a good read. And I want to thank each of you for being with us today, of course. You can reach me at info@conversationslive.net or at our 800 number, 495-7617, 800-495-7617. You know we love to hear from you, get feedback, answer your questions. Always feel free. And you can also find me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair and on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.